Lecture 21, Tuesday, December 31st, 2002. And at midnight tonight, we'll have 2003. Our topic, time for returning. Very significant. Time for returning. Our points are time for returning to our original purity and integrity. I have never left it, nor has it left me. This return is a spiritual healing, and remember no more. Very fascinating. We'll have a lot of fun with that. Think about this once. What does all this mean? What does all this mean to you, and what does it all mean to me? How do we equate to this time for returning? The time for coming back to our original purity and integrity. We oftentimes ignored that and thought that wasn't very important. We thought it wasn't very important to come back to our original purity and integrity, and we thought that we could escape it and just live as we are doing and enjoying the circumstances that come to us where we are right now, with the body we have and the life we have and all those things. But it doesn't work that way. Inside of every person is a gnawing, yearning, choosing desire to be better. There is a desire to do funny things, like miracles, you know. Why is it that people think about flying without an airplane? Why is it that people think about levitating, teleporting? Why is it people think about telecommunication without having any wires? Oh, we want to get away from those wires. And we want to get away from those wires, and how do we get away from those wires? Well, we have wireless devices that send signals through the air. Well, you see, we're getting closer and closer and closer to the signals from our mind to another mind, from our thought system to another thought system. This is not an accident. This does not happen by chance that we have this desire within us to fly, to levitate, to do all these neat things. It's not unusual at all. And it's not just a few silly people who have that. Virtually every person has thought about swimming under the water without a swimming device, without an air device, and to swim underwater and swim for hours, just enjoying it, being down there and looking at all the fish and looking at all the sea creatures and saying, "Hi, brother, how are you doing down there?" You know, everyone has. I know your enthusiasm isn't overwhelming in this in particular instance, but it's true. It's really true. And why is it that Irene is so crazy about diving out of an airplane? She would love to dive out of an airplane without a parachute. And she gets as close to that as she can by using a bungee cord. But it's not the same thing. You're still attached. What she'd like to do is to surfboard right out of an airplane and go sailing through the sky, soaring on the clouds, as they show in some of the movies, that people are soaring on the clouds because their camera board is quite good. And they are. They have the single board that they use, and no board, and the flipping and diving and holding hands as they're falling down through the sky. It's just really exciting stuff. And everyone would like to do it, except they don't want to do it. They feel gravity is too real. It would pull them down and smash them up. And it does do that to some people. But basically, the desire is there, not considering gravity, not considering anything. You just love to do the impossible. You just love to fly and soar and sail. You know, John does it the opposite way. He climbs up the mountain. and comes down, of course, too. But he climbs up the mountain, and he thinks nothing about what's down below him. When he looks down below him, he knows he's on a solid turf and that he's got a good hand grip and that everything's okay. But why does he feel that he's got a good hand grip? Why does he feel that he can do that? Why does he feel that he can climb up a mountain and come down a mountain like a Spider-Man? Why does anyone feel like the Spider-Man climbing up and down glass windows and New York City buildings and things like that? And the police try to stop them from doing that because it's so dangerous, not only to the person who might kill himself, but he might land on other people and hurt them on the sidewalk too. Those things all have to be considered by the relative beings that run the police departments. So, what happens when these things go on? In our minds, we all have the desire to do the undoable, to do the thing that society and that the world and that science and so forth doesn't allow us to do. We pretend that we go through the life stream of a body, through their blood vessels, and we ride in little carts at Disneyland, sort of simulating being in the bloodstream. And we see all the blood moving around us, and we see how the food is ingested into the body. We just love this impossible stuff, the improbable stuff. But the day is rapidly coming upon us where we'll do that. Because there's nothing impossible to us. There's nothing impossible in this relative world. We've created it. We can create ourselves doing anything we want to do in it. And we have done it. And we have done a lot of very wonderful, a lot of very silly things, beautiful things, and we'll be doing a lot more of these things. But you just watch. You just watch as time comes on. You'll remember, well, yes, when I was a kid, we used to have to walk to school. Now we just sort of say, school, and we're there. Boom. Neat, huh? We say, I'm going to climb the mountain. John's going to go up the mountain step by step, and I'm going to go, and I'll wait for him at the top. Hi, John. How you doing there, baby? Yeah. And you're up on top of the mountain looking down, waiting for him. Got the picnic lunch all spread out there. Bottles of wine are all chilled at the high altitude. And everything is all in perfect order. You see, when you really open your mind and open your heart to the realization that these things can be, they will be. Because we're doing the very simple parts now by saying, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. When we say that we return to our original purity and integrity. But just remember, when we in fact do become aware of our original purity and integrity, it's not just going to be that we have a perfect body. It's not just going to be that we have perfect health, perfect relationships. It's not just going to be those details. It's going to be a lot of other things opening up, and where we will do all of these things that we call the gifts of the spirit, where Maharishi Mahesh Yogi was teaching his youngsters how to levitate and, you know, sort of get the bounce and get the feeling and get off the ground a little bit. And some of them did levitate, but most of them didn't. And most of them won't, because they're not ready for it yet. They're not ready to accept their original purity and integrity. And the moment they accept their original purity and integrity, they will levitate. The Maharishi isn't wrong. He may have levitated. I have not experienced that with him. He may have levitated. He may do these things. He may demonstrate those things. There are a lot of masters that do. But that doesn't mean that every master can, or that every master chooses to, or that every master chooses to publicly do the things that a master can do. You see, as you develop your master consciousness, and you are doing it pretty well, you will start demonstrating the returning to your original purity and integrity as you go along. It's just like you're developing your skill as a pianist. In the beginning, you know, you're always a pianist. In the beginning, you play poorly. But as you progress, you improve. And as a beginning student on the piano, you'd love to play as a postgraduate student. You know, you just love to be able to do in the beginning what you will do as you develop your skill. And you say, wow, that'd be a miracle. It'd be a miracle if I could play like that. Well, there are two types of pianists. One type of pianist is a mechanical pianist who does everything mechanically perfect. Hits every note perfectly, sustains it for the right length of time, does everything according to the book. And then there is the innovative, creative pianist who interprets the music and puts feeling and power and joy into it, the magic of his own interpretation. True, he uses the same notes that the original composer uses. He uses the same emphases that the original composer uses, but he puts the magic in it right from his heart, because he does not limit himself to what is on the paper. He opens the door to be far superior to that, far greater than that. And when he does that, he expresses on the piano in a way that everyone says, wow, I have never heard that piece played like that. The same piece, same music, same notes throughout, but his ability to transmit his love for that piece through how he brings it forth is utterly amazing. This is the work of a master. And you would say too that if you could play like Cliborne, if you could play like Paderewski, if you could play like some of the great pianists, you'd be fantastic, you'd be marvelous, you'd be great. And yet they don't consider that they play great. They play with all their heart. They play as a master. They play beautifully, and they know they're well paid for it. They know that people appreciate it. But they play from their inner self, and their music is great. As you develop your awareness of your original purity and integrity, you will play the game of life also from your heart, which to a degree you're doing right now, but you're not doing it very effectively. And the reason you're not doing it very effectively is because you're just in the beginning stages of it. And the beginning stages can last a lifetime or just a moment. Because the moment you click with your divine self and you recognize who you are and what you are and that you're fantastic, you instantly have that ability to do anything you want to do. It's quite a marvelous thing. Time to return to my original purity and integrity. When you return to your original purity and integrity, what do? Well, what you do basically is to feel one with all. You feel harmonious with all. When you return to your original purity and integrity, you feel one with all. One as all, perhaps, is even better. But you feel this not because you have done something, but because you have not done something. You have not thought that it was impossible. You have, in fact, thought it's a possibility. But you haven't given it too much power because you don't know what it is that you're empowering. You're just wanting to be whole and perfect. You're wanting to express harmony, peace, joy, and love, and abundance in your life. You want to express all this stuff. And so in doing that, you think that that's what it's all about. But that's only the beginning. It's only the beginning. What it's all about is when you begin to express your original purity and express your integrity, to think about it, to want it, to aim at it, to look forward to it, are great. But if I were to ask any one of you right now, what is your original purity? You couldn't tell me. You haven't thought about it. It's not that you don't know. It's just that you haven't thought about it. Many of you, as you were growing up, if someone were to come to you and say, you're a practitioner, they'd say, yeah, of what? practitioner of being a pianist, the practitioner of being a publicist of anything. You know, a practitioner is just someone who practices what they do. Usually it's referred to as a doctor. The doctor is a practitioner. And he practices medicine. He practices the art of using chemicals and drugs and various things to work with people who have problems that can be handled through chemicals and drugs. And he uses very good judgment with it because it's a very strong, potent thing that he's dealing with. It could easily kill anybody. Now, the doctors, in doing this, they know that there is something greater than what they're doing. They know that there is something deeper and more significant than the medicines that they're giving out, because they know that the medicines do not heal anybody or do not cure anybody. They don't even destroy the bacteria. I think that's a point we might think about very seriously. Medicines do not destroy bacteria. Medicines only inhibit. They inhibit the bacteria. They inhibit the unpleasant experience you're having. They inhibit a headache. They don't take them away. They just inhibit them. Now, we want to get to the point where they no longer are there. And they'll be there as long as we feel that we are not the master of ourselves. And the moment we start recognizing that we're the master of ourselves, then we will start not only inhibiting things that are not beneficial to us, we will start supporting things, we'll start encouraging things, so that they will be beneficial to us. Now, how would you encourage your original purity? Well, you look at your original purity, and you don't know what it looks like, but you look at your original purity and you say, I want to be my original purity, which is perfect health, which is health, not the word perfect, but health, which is wealth, which is happiness, which is harmony, which is peace, which is love, and which are all these virtues. That's my original purity. Now, how do I experience my original purity? Where do I find it? Where do I get close to it? Where do I make it mine? We make our original purity ours by turning our attention to the wholeness that we are rather than to the illness. It's the art of a practitioner, basically. We look at the new experience that we want to have. It's not new, but at an experience we want to have, not at the experience we are having. If we look at the experience we're having, we empower it. If we look at the experience we want to have, we're empowering that. Now, what experience do you want to empower? Do you want to empower the experience that you'd like to have, or that you're working on? Or do you want to empower the experience that has gotten you nowhere, that has limited you and held you in bondage, so to speak? What do you want to do? Now, if you want to have the experience that uplifts you, that moves you into the next dimension of awareness, well, then you will say to yourself, I have it. The term that we often use is, I will have, I want to have, I would like, I desire, I hope for, I need, I want, and that doesn't work. Oh, it works on a little bit. A little bit comes true, whatever your concept is allowed to hold for yourself, but not much, not much. Most of your original purity is hidden from you because you will not look to see it. You say, oh, that's too good to be true. Oh, that'd be so wonderful if that were true. Do you mean that woman who threw her husband out wants him back? Boy, is he lucky. He's getting his original purity. Matsumana, in a way, in a manner of speaking, but really not. Because no experience ever is the same. If somebody throws you out of the house, like a wife throws her husband out for drinking or doing other things that she doesn't approve of, he can never come back. Never. Even if he were to come back and she were to forgive him and they'd just have a big love affair all over again, there'd be no marriage. Because once she doubts, it's over with. Once you doubt yourself or anybody else, your relationship is over. Simple doubt, nothing so terribly complex, but a simple doubt. And when you have that simple doubt, what happens? You have mistrust. You have a lack of belief in one another. And that original purity can never be there. The original purity of your relationship, for instance, was that you got together and you just admired and loved each other and wanted to be together. And you had, I don't like to use the word trust, but you had full acceptance of each other under all circumstances. And then when that acceptance is destroyed somehow, that's it. You think, well, I can get that back together. No, you can't. You can't. Once you have placed a drop of ink in the water will never be the same. You can take the ink out of the water by putting fresh water in there, but there will be a taint on the side of the glass. You can wash the glass off. You can scrub the glass off, and it'll still be there. In so minute a particle, but still be there. This is what we forget about. We forget about these minute particles. The things that are there and do disturb us and do manipulate us and do control us. And those things can limit us so tremendously, it's beyond our imagination. And they do limit us too. We empower them to limit us. And what a strange thing to do. What a strange thing to do. Think about it. Your original purity, your original integrity, what is that? We talked about that many times. But your original integrity is to have your original cell so that it does not know otherness. If you had an original cell that you took off of the body, usually it's a cell from a fetus, but if you had an original cell and you were to nurture that cell could, in its highest degree, replicate itself into another human body. Interesting, huh? Now, can that be done? Well, it's done all the time in the womb. But that, can that be done? Yes, it can be done, but it's not worth our pursuing because that's just the intermediate step. It's like building the pyramid. The world wants to tell you that the pyramid was built by some very muscular Egyptians or people from Egypt area. And that they hauled those great stones that they had carved over a great many miles over the river and to the site of the building of the pyramid. They should have built the pyramids where the stones were, but they didn't. They built them where they wanted them. And in the process, the labor of these people was stupendous. In fact, scientifically, it can be proven that it was impossible. It could not be done. And was not done. We know that. Now, what was done? What was done? How was the pyramid built? It was built by thought. Now, you can go and you can build your pyramid with your physical hands, should you choose to do so. And you would have a very lugubrious, laborious pyramid that would take a long, long time. And maybe never be done. And yet, these few pharaohs had some mystical magic about them, that they could speak those pyramids into being, and they could manifest them. You see, here's the point about that. The pyramid is kind of a strange thing. The pyramid is like spiritual healing in a way. The people who achieve that ability to speak their word and demonstrate something like the pyramid, they're very special people. Well, they offered the pyramids to the kings, but the kings didn't want to take them because the kings knew the responsibility of the pyramids. and they also didn't know how they were built. And so the pyramids were set aside for many years. The kings claimed it as theirs, but they had nothing to do with it. They did not go inside. They didn't bury themselves in the pyramids. They didn't do anything, even though it's thought to have been a great place to bury kings. And sarcophagus, isn't it? And it's very interesting, but they weren't buried there. They weren't buried there. It was more of a symbol than anything else. Where were they buried? They were buried in a totally different place, in a very inauspicious place, where no one would know they were there, and no one would bother their resting place, which is what they had intended to do. Now, why did they do that? Why did they build the pyramid? Why did they want to do such a thing? Well, they knew that the pyramid was a learning center. They knew that the pyramid was a place where inspiration would abound. And they knew that they would make some inroads into it, but not many, because it was a learning center. And we have explained to you how the pyramid functions and how it is a learning center. We have done this many times over the years. And think about it. How does a learning center work? A learning center does not have really any rooms. It does not really have any bathrooms. It does not have any opportunity for people to do anything at all. In fact, it's solid stone. When people go there mentally. And they go in the different areas of the pyramid mentally. Now, the pharaohs wanted to build the pyramid. They were inspired people. But they couldn't tell their people that they were inspired. So they had to make it appear that they were having it built in a very physical way. But in truth, it was a snap of a finger and it was done. The men were working, and then the pharaoh, in his magical way, spoke his word and the pyramid was done. And people thought that they didn't think about time. They just totally accepted that it was done. Totally accepted it was done without any thought as to how it was done and when it was done, who did it. The fact that it only took one evening, you might say, for the whole thing to be finished. They remembered that they started on it and then it was done. The interim time, they had no remembrance of, because that was not the important thing for them. The important thing was now that the worship center was there. So, how did they get into the worship center? They didn't. Only those who were chosen to go to that school and to learn those things that they had to offer. Then those people were invited to come in and were taken in and shown the way. Much like in the Harry Potter story, where people would go and pick up some common object lying on the ground, and it was their passport through the portal to go into this other area. Beautiful. Beautiful concept. It's amazing. This person writing the story tried to make it so human, tried to make it that they had to knock the people who lived in the area unconscious so they wouldn't be aware that all of these wizards were coming into their homeland, into their presence. And of course, they wouldn't have to do that, would they? All they'd have to do is just speak their word and the people wouldn't remember a thing, which is what they later said they did. But they could have said that right from the beginning. Now, we've never left our original purity. We've never left our original integrity. We've never left any of these things. But we think we have. We think that we have forgotten it. We've forgotten who we are. And now we're going to want to remember who we are so that we can be it. Well, that doesn't come quite that easy. It comes with a little more preparation than that. Humanity quite likely will live for trillions of years here on Earth, really. The Earth is not going to blow up and fall apart. It's not going to cease to exist. even if it has some major problems, it won't cease to exist, because there's no reason for it to cease to exist. Just like all the planets, big and little, who were created at the same time that the Earth was created, they're doing their thing, and they're neither greater or lesser. They're merely more habitable, as we are becoming more habitable here. But everyone forgets. They forget all about those things that had happened. And in forgetting about those things that happened, what happens to them is that they just move into the next activity without any concern as to how they got there. They don't remember that just yesterday they couldn't even lift a stone, and today they build a pyramid. Yesterday they couldn't ride a horse, and today they ride a whole team of horses. And they also have their ability to be in with the activity. Now, let's take a minute and see how this return in spiritual life goes. And listen again to our not remembered. Remember that story? It's quite a beautiful story. It took place here on the campus, the University of Healing here. And it's a very poignant story. One that we might get some great benefit from reading here. It's called Not Remembered. The man came to the chief of the Campo Indians, located in the reaches of the mountains of the Pacific coast, near what was later known as San Diego. The man wandered far and wide seeking healing for his crippled body. Chief No More greeted the traveler. After a suitable incantations and treatments, the man was made whole. Archaeology and legend tell us that the early Indian tribes of Southern California, living in peace and plenty, lived on the hillsides and the mountains, which were covered with lush vegetation. The meridians of the world were auspicious, crossing directly at the tribal headquarters where the shaman held their traditional center. The valley flows with a steady stream from the cleavage of the mountain fastness running down the valley, meeting other streams and rivers running to the sea both west to the Pacific and east to the Bay of California. The shaman were the teachers and the holders of mystical secrets necessary to manifest the verdant growth throughout the land. The tribal chiefs were responsible for carrying out the knowledge of the shaman, and though their own wisdom was very great. It was an age when peace reigned supreme. The lamb walked with the lion, and both heaven and earth were in accord with one another. Into this purity came the man from other places seeking bodily healing. Chief No More greeted the traveler as he struggled into the shaman's circle. He was born by his entourage, for in his land he was a very important person. His people left him with the shamans. He said to the shaman, "I will do whatever you ask to be made whole." The shaman went about their work, paying little attention to the would-be guest. The visitor sat down facing the shaman's fire under the ancient live oak tree with the gurgling brook happily bouncing past, singing its eternal song of joy and life. The shaman went about their business, ignoring their guest. Little known to the man, his healing treatment had already begun. The delicate smoke of the fire changed colors in enchanting ways, and a hypnotic sense permeated the air. The man became sleepy. Shortly thereafter, He curled up in the fetal position, content and relaxed. The shaman prepared him, and they discussed his plight to return to his original purity and integrity with the wise chiefs. Regaled in their ceremonial finery, seven chiefs and of the seven tribes of the Valley of the Seven Mountains gathered around the sleeping cluster. The shaman in three chanted over their sacred fire, and stillness pervaded the spiritual sight. The man sat up completely conscious but wholly unconscious of his physical body. The shamans took their place in the perfect triangle behind the seven chiefs. Chief No More assumed the speaking role. "Who are you? Where have you come from?" Chief No More asked the traveler, regardless that all seven knew full well every detail. The chief knew the man had to say it for himself, and in it revealed his problem, for the physical manifestation was but an expression of the thought that the man held about himself. "My name is Wannabe But Am Not. With this name, I was titled following my rite of manhood. My clan live far east of these green lands here where the desert winds blow and the land is desolate. I am 70 years by the rising of each sun, but since my naming at 9, I have lived in this imperfect body. I am ready to put away whatever is required and do whatever is necessary to be made whole." The man explained how the women of his clan carried him around for more than 60 years, and his life was a burden to all his people, yet he could not die. He had tried every poison, but none released his spirit. He studied to be a shaman, but this led to no end, but continued anguish. He turned to every passing wandering shaman from local or distant tribes, but each one only looked at him as though they saw why he bore this infirmity. Yet they said nothing, nor did anything, to alleviate his malady. The weary searcher spoke on at great length about his homeland, his family, his traditions, his worship, and his own sickness, for he most assuredly thought of his problem as a sickness foisted upon him from some malevolence. Once again the shaman rose and circled the fire and chanted. A smoke flooded over the man, and again he slept. The shaman returned to their triangle. Chief No More looked about his peers. He knew their decision was not the healing of Wannabe But Am Not, rather whether they should do as he asks. Changing the outer man and not the inner man would be catastrophic, as well as changing the inner man and not changing the outer man would be equally unforgiving. The chiefs, knew changing the inner and would changing the outer man would change too. But changing the inner would remanufacture the same sick outer again and again and again. But more, if the man did not change himself, the change would be of no benefit to him, to the spiritual question. The chiefs interviewed Wannabe But Am Not as he lay under the spell of the smoke requiring him to speak the truth. They asked him questions which took him to his expression before birth. They asked Wannabe But Am Not to look at the choice he made for himself in this dimension. "I decided I would inhabit a decrepit body with a fresh, ever-young mind and seek to remember the pure design of every human divine body, and yet live in such a body to remind me that, for me, it was impossible. Now I recall, I chose to remember only as I aged and exclusively sought out my inner and exclusively sought out my outer. I recall I created a moment just like this, and he came awake. Chief Nomura looked at their guest and said, "Hello, my friend. It's good of you to come and visit us. Please come again when it pleases you." The visitor stood and stretched his strong frame. As a star child, he fulfilled his reality of forever light. He shook his head, and his youthful lion mane fell in lustrous black, for his hair was glorious to behold. His blue eyes shone powerfully from his tanned, youthful face. His body muscles rippled as he flexed them as though he had just exercised well. His loincloth emboldened his physique. Chief Nomura said, "Have a good journey, my friend. By the way, what is your name?" Wannabe Nomura turned to the chief and said, "My name is Eternal Youth." The visitor looked at the seven chiefs and the three shaman and asked, "Now I will continue my journey of sharing peace, beauty, and youth with the universe. As my father, the sun, dwells in me, and his spirit in my spirit, his life in my life, his expression in my expression, it is my life to share what I am with the world." Eternal Youth was born new and would never more remember what he had been. He would never more recall the limitation of his past because he returned to his original purity and integrity. Chief Nomura exists eternally to lift the web off each man from his own creation of thinking that he is limited in any way. However, in living the old memory, it is no more, and life dwells as though it had been there always. He had always been young and always been fresh. For the eternal purity and integrity are young and purity. This sacred place exists today in the Campo Hills. The Campo Indian Reservation touches the edge of the valley where the sacred center exists eternally. The magnetic meridian crossing, moving from time to time in a very specific manner. Healings established here, which take place in people, are very unique. Those healed return to their original purity and integrity and recall no more their former lives. No more their former selves. Each live fully in the here and the now, born new, youthful, vital, eternal. No more want to be, but am not, but eternal youth. The eyes of the young men often see the ancient ones and watch them work. The eyes of the innocent know how Chief Nomura, his peers and shaman, yet dwell in their sacred valley. The live oak tree still stands adjacent to the once bubbling streams that leapt over the waterfalls down the canyon walls to join other streams and rivers running to their delta at the bay and ocean. Lightning, forest fire, and pioneers who would change the world again and again to their limited image burned the dense forests and the rich vegetation from the land, from the verdant green gardens that were everywhere. And the valley was green long years ago. One day the land will return to its original purity and integrity, a garden of Eden, a place of paradise. Then those who come to the Campo Indian chiefs seeking wholeness will find themselves, wherever they may be. There will be no longer a need to go for healing, but rather to be whole. Humanity loves to play and to say that the world needs to change. It needs diversity. It needs dualism and dissension to be interesting. Chief Nomura and Eternal Youth would say to those with such memories, "Let them be no more and consider bliss." Currently, humanity can only glimpse bliss. Once it knows its natural state of bliss and dwells in that natural state, nothing else will ever be of any consequence. So, let it not be remembered. We have quite a story there. It took place right down the way here, a little bit behind our property, where that big old oak tree stands, many hundreds of years old. A beautiful tree resembling the magnificence that once was of all the trees in the neighborhood. But today, it has faded away. The other trees are gone, but they're actually still there. It's just that we don't see them. When we have tuned our attention to our divine inner self, we'll come to the realization that we know all these things. We see all these things. And whatever it is that is now, that we'll remember no more. And we will remember the day when Chief No More met Wannabe But Am Not and brought about the greatest change in his life. But Wannabe Am Not does not remember that he was Wannabe But Am Not. He only remembers that he is eternal life. And this will be your gift as you walk in the presence of today and as you realize that you are that eternal self, now and forevermore. It's a wonderful gift and a wonderful program and something that all of you will be experiencing. I tell you this because by the very fact that you are holding in there, seeking to walk this perfect way, that is what's in store for you. And that's what I'm ready to share with you. I thank you and I love you and I see it done for you now. Time for returning to our original purity and our integrity.